And welcome to Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the Greater Delaware Valley National Multiple Sclerosis Society, we have its president, Kevin Moffitt, Bianca Fraser-Johnson. She is a board member for our local chapter, and she is also the chair of the Delaware WEM Committee. And Molly Giordano, the executive director of the Delaware Art Museum, who will also be sharing her lived experience with MS this morning. And welcome all. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We've got a great big event that is a major fundraiser for you coming up on May 20th at, coincidentally, the Delaware Art Museum. But let's get started this conversation first with, let's talk about MS in general. Do you want to give us first, Kevin, that real quick elevator speech about what the society is, and then let's talk about MS.
Well, so I think I'll talk with what MS is, because that's probably for a lot of the listeners, they just may not know. So MS is a disease that affects the central nervous system. And the simplest way of explaining it is it interrupts signals from the brain to the rest of the body. For some people, that could manifest in tingling. But for other people, they may lose their vision in one eye, or they may have trouble walking. And the most difficult part of living with MS is you never really know what's going to happen next.
This is a disease, even I know, it waxes and wanes. You might have terrible symptoms, and then they may abate. Maybe you won't go completely back to what you had, but you'll have another period where it's almost in a remission state.
Right. I think, and Molly, this is probably where you might want to step in as somebody with firsthand experience of this.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the greatest challenge. You hit the nail on the head. The uncertainty that you live with, you might have days where the symptoms are non-existent to extremely mild. And then you go through what they often call flares, which is a worsening of symptoms and lesions that can affect different parts of your brain. And that can cause everything from a temporarily very significant mobility issues, a partial blindness, cognitive problems, which is something that a lot of people aren't aware of and don't talk about. And it largely is an invisible disease for that reason, because what you could do today, you might not be able to do tomorrow and vice versa. And that is why so many people suffer and struggle in silence, and why events like this and why nonprofits like Kevin's organization are so critical to all of us who are living daily with the disease.
Kevin, what's the prevalence of this? How many people are affected by MS?
So it's an interesting question, because just a few years ago, we were saying that there are 400,000 Americans living with MS. But my experience as somebody working at the National MS Society, that it had to be so much more, right? And so the MS Society actually invested in a research project to really come up with a much better estimate. And we ended up at nearly 1 million Americans are living with MS, which is an incredible number.
And I would confirm that, because one of the reasons I talk so openly about having the disease, and my mother has it as well, is every time I bring it up, I find a new connection. And people often are told, this could affect your employment, this might affect your relationships. And other generations have been encouraged to keep that quiet, to keep that hidden. And the more we talk about it, the more we all find that there are many more people living kind of hidden in plain sight. And I almost once a month will meet a new person just in my community who's my age and has MS and is living with it silently.
Oh, well, I want to talk then about diagnosis, because what I'm getting from this is if the symptoms are not consistent, there are probably a lot of people who have this disease and don't know it yet. So do we know what the cause is and who is likely to be diagnosed with MS?
That has changed so much there. Again, it's a disease with no known cause or cure. However, there are some indications that Epstein-Barr virus may be linked to developing MS, but the vast majority of people have been exposed to Epstein-Barr. There's clearly something else going on. It could be another environmental condition. For example, we know that people who serve in the armed forces are more likely to be diagnosed, twice as likely, in fact. And so we're trying to figure out what that environmental trigger is, but there's clearly also something genetic that predisposes you to having MS as well. So it's really difficult to say what the cause is. We're getting closer to knowing what that is, which is very exciting. But also to really think about the symptoms. And to your question, a lot of people, I'm not sure, Molly, what your experience was, but a lot of people that I talked to at the National MS Society, they were diagnosed probably, you know, in between 20 and 40 generally, right? But a lot of them actually had symptoms much earlier than that. Usually it's like loss of vision for a period when they were in high school or college that they just wrote off to, studying too much or partying too much, what have you. But then they started to have more symptoms 5, 6, 7 years later, and then get diagnosed. And then they think back and think, well, maybe that was my first symptom. And Molly, what happened with you?
That was part of it. And I'm unusual because my mother had it and I was well acquainted with the disease. And my doctors and those around me should have been able to pinpoint what was happening. But even I found convenient ways to explain away all my symptoms. And vision was part of the first of it. And I thought I needed stronger glasses. And I kept going back to my eye doctor and saying, I need a better prescription. My eyes hurt all the time. No matter what I do, my eyes are straining. And I was actually having some optic neuritis, and I was losing parts of my vision. And I attributed it to wedding stress, planning my wedding. I had tingling, I had numbness, I had sensations that were just not normal. And everybody kept telling me it was anxiety, it was stress, it was looking at a computer too long. There are many convenient excuses you can find. And that's why early intervention is important. I still believe, had I not been acquainted with the disease, it would have easily been another 5+ years before I would have gotten a diagnosis.
I hate to ask that, but is that common that you have this long gap between you get a diagnosis? And is it harder for a woman to get a diagnosis? Because you were explained it was, oh, it was stress, it was wedding, it was, oh, it's
Well,
work. Yeah.
it's interesting because women are far more likely to have the disease, and Kevin, I'm sure, has those statistics. But yes, in my experience, when a woman comes in with problems that could be masked by, it could be an anxiety, that is often the first question. The MRI immediately uncovered what was happening. You could see the lesions in my brain. It wasn't a question. But I have met a number of people who were not familiar with the disease, who suffered for years trying to get clarity on what was happening to them. And in some cases, went well over a decade before they had any help. So it's one of the biggest challenges, and I think why this organization is important and why this messaging is important, because people need to know earlier that this is a possibility, and you need to have those screenings as soon as possible.
Now, who's making the diagnosis? When you went to your eye doctor, your ophthalmologist didn't think of this disease as a possibility?
No, but often that's where a lot of people are diagnosed is through an eye doctor. They understand what's happening and they send them for further testing. It was my general doctor who I explained the family history, explained the symptoms, and finally she just ordered an MRI and the results were so clear there wasn't a question. But for some people, the results aren't that clear from an MRI and it might take many, many more specialist visits to get clarity.
Now, Molly just mentioned that women are more likely to get this. You mentioned former military. I know they're also more likely to get ALS, but yet here we've got genetics in this too. Is anyone predisposed to getting this? And there's an age factor in this or a racial? Well, we know gender is playing into it.
So there's a lot in that question. Let me try to unpack it.
See, I just throw them out there and I let you wrestle them to the ground. Dig for it and you'll get there.
As opposed to some diseases where there is a specific genetic marker, I think there's more than 200 genetic markers that we think predispose somebody to developing MS. You mentioned gender. So as Molly said, women are 3 to 4 times more likely to be diagnosed. I will say when I started at the MS Society in 2005, the messaging was that MS generally affects people of Northern European descent, so Caucasian white people. And fast forward 2015, I was at a research conference where a researcher got up and presented her study that basically showed that a black woman in the United States was just as likely to be diagnosed with MS. So we don't think necessarily the diseases changed that much. It's just that people were not being diagnosed because the thinking was that it only really affected white women. And now we've kind of turned the corner. And I will say, I was recently talking to somebody from South Jersey who talked about her difficulty in being diagnosed and being told by a neurologist that, well, you're just wearing high heels too much. That's why you have tingling in your legs and numbness. And so it took her, to Molly's point, 4 years to get diagnosed. And that is critical that people push back on medical professionals if they think they have MS, because the earlier diagnosed, the earlier you get on disease modifying therapy, and there are over 20 now that are really effective in slowing down disease progression. They don't stop it, they don't reverse it, but at least it slows down the disease progression.
I heard the quotation marks around the word diagnosis at one point there. Do people go throughout their entire life without ever getting a diagnosis? They just live until they pass naturally, or maybe something else. What is the progression, though, of the disease and the life expectancy? Does it have an impact on that?
It generally does not affect life expectancy unless you have the most serious form of the disease, which is progressive MS. But yes, there have been studies that show that, you know, there are people who live their entire lives with MS and never really have symptoms, or they never really get diagnosed. And the human body is a magical thing sometimes, and then the brain just finds a way to work around. But, you know, after the fact, in an autopsy situation, it was discovered that actually this person did have lesions and they did have signs of having MS.
Is this related to other diseases?
Yes and no. I mean, so it's one of many neurological conditions. People think of Parkinson's, people think of Alzheimer's, for example. But it really does stand alone in terms of how it's treated.
Molly?
Yes, and I was just going to add that I am a grateful recipient of the disease-modifying drug advancements. I got on an excellent drug within a few months of my diagnosis. I just surpassed my 10-year anniversary of being on that drug. And my mother is a contrast. I mean, she and I are, we look very similar. We're very similar people. She got diagnosed when she was 33. And she has significant mobility issues now because there were no drugs available for several decades,
right,
until she was well advanced into the disease. And the hope is that 30 years from now, you can directly compare my experience to the experience she went through. And that's a really good indication of how advanced the drugs have become and how they are actually stopping disease progression almost before it begins.
You know what? Before we talk about fundraising for the organization, for your society, let's talk about the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, especially the Greater Delaware Valley chapter, the services that you offer, and what's the mission of the society? Because you're mentioning these drugs and the research projects. I'm going to guess that a lot of that is to be attributed to you.
Right. So the MS Society is the second largest funder of MS research in the entire world, second only to the National Institutes of Health. So basically, it's either the U.S. taxpayer or the National MS Society that's making all this progress happen. And as much as we are proud of our research and all of the advancements that have been made of all the FDA-approved treatments that are on the market, the MS Society has played a role in the development of each and every one. But we also recognize that people need help right now. So we have an MS Navigator program. We have over 70 social workers who are specially trained to help people living with MS, manning the phones every day of the week. And so if you or someone you know lives with MS, they can call 1-800-FIGHT-MS and really get help from people who know the disease and know what resources are out there.
That was 1-800-FIGHT-MS.
And Kevin, one of the biggest issues that patients deal with is fighting insurance situations.
Yeah.
Is that something that there are services to help navigate some of those complex conversations?
So what we find, it's not a lack of insurance. It's the fact that people are underinsured, and a lot of insurance companies. So I'm not sure what your experience was, Molly, but you know, we do have a lot of people who call, and we hear from neurologists about this as well. So you're diagnosed with MS, and let's say your MS specialist thinks, well, you have a really, it seems really aggressive. So I want to put you on what I think as a neurologist is the most powerful treatment. But then the insurance company will come back and say, well, no, you need to fail on this treatment first before you can try this other treatment. And time equals brain in terms of MS. So the quicker you get on an effective treatment, the better off you're going to be in the long run, but also the better off your family is going to be in the long run. And so we've spent a lot of time helping people with kind of those appeals, and also working with the neurological community to come up with just better solutions.
Molly, you alluded to employment too.
If someone has MS, are they facing employment issues as well as insurance issues? Do they need accommodations? Do they need special equipment? Do you help with that as well? Is that part of the navigation process?
So that is part of the MS Navigator program. And one of the most common questions and one of the most important issues, and Molly can speak to this as well, is about what we call disclosure. Like, when you're diagnosed with MS, do you tell your coworkers? Do you tell your employer? Or do you wait until you need to ask for those accommodations? And a lot of what's really difficult about the disease is one of the most common symptoms and the most destructive symptoms is fatigue. And so people living with MS, they may look completely normal, but they're not able to like work until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. They need to go home and get their rest. And they haven't disclosed, they haven't told people they have MS. And then people start to think, well, that person's not working very hard. And so that is one issue that our MS navigators spend a lot of time talking to people about.
Molly, you made the decision to disclose, obviously. How has that impacted you?
Well, everybody's different and everybody's work situation is different. So everyone has to consider carefully, what type of employment they have and how their relationship with their employer is. I just happen to always advocate more for honesty and transparency. I think it makes relationships smoother, as we were just discussing. If you're having some cognitive issues, if you're having fatigue, you need those to be clear and known so that you can get the accommodations that you're looking for. But also just because this is how we as a society realize that so many people are dealing with so many things, MS being one of them, affecting 1 million of us. And we can't do that unless we're openly discussing the needs that we have and supporting one another. And now that I have become known in Wilmington as the person to talk to, I cannot tell you how many people have connected me with a friend of a friend or their spouse's cousin or their next door neighbor and say, can you please talk to this person? They've just been diagnosed. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to talk about it. They aren't sure if they should tell their teenage children, for example, they should tell their employer. And I go on numerous lunch and coffee dates talking people through this. So that's an important element because you need somebody who's gone through it to be able to guide you through this. And the MS Society is one of those organizations that you can seek that guidance and that support and get what you need to make the right decision.
What about peer support, person to person?
Yep, we have a program that connects people living with MS across the country, but also we have self-help groups that are both in person and now post-COVID online that people can really connect with other people in their community.
We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
And welcome back. With us today from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter, we have its president, Kevin Moffitt, board member, Bianca Fraser-Johnson. She is a board member for our local chapter, and she is also the chair of the Delaware WAM Committee, the Women Against MS, and chair of a big fundraising event that we're going to start talking about in just a couple of minutes, and Molly Giordano. She is executive director for the Delaware Art Museum, and a patient herself and the daughter of someone with MS. For more information about absolutely anything that we have been talking about so far, go to nationalmssociety.org. Let's talk about the importance of fundraising right now, and we're going to bring Bianca into this one. And you've been with them since you were 6 years old, fundraising. Obviously, with all of this direct patient service and the research, et cetera, fundraising is a vital part of the chapter.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when Kevin was touching on kind of the vision for the Multiple Sclerosis Society, again, the mission is to find a cure while empowering people with MS to live their best lives. And so I think that the fundraising piece is so important because not only is it helping to fund some of the services locally and across the U.S., but it's also raising those really critical funds to help find a cure.
And it's also spreading awareness as well.
That's right. Absolutely. A lot of our events are not just about fundraising. We call them friendraising. And it's truly just bringing people from the community in to ensure they understand what MS is. It's actually very common that I will be out talking about an event we're hosting and people don't know what MS stands for. So you're right. Awareness is a key piece here.
Women Against MS. We keep referencing the WAMs. Do you want to give us quickly a little rundown about who they are and what they're up to?
Absolutely. So the terminology WAMs actually was started by the National MS Society. They have been known to host WAMs luncheons across the country. And that term is something that we here in Delaware, a group of us formed a committee, and we decided to use that language because, as Kevin mentioned, there's, you know, women are four times more likely to be diagnosed with MS. And I think that that is a really important fact for all of us out in the community. And it's why I was personally driven to support this organization. And so last year, our committee, the Delaware WAMS, or Women Against MS Committee, decided to start hosting an annual event. They take different forms every year. Last year, we did something called A Night in the Garden, focusing on the healing power of nature. And that event had over 300 Delawareans attend. We raised $165,000 towards this cause. And this year, we're really excited. We are taking advantage of Molly's beautiful Delaware Art Museum and the Copeland Sculpture Garden out back to host what's called Sip Savories and Sculptures. It's Saturday, May 20th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. It happens to fall on World Bee Day. So we thought we would do a unique twist on last year's theme of nature. And we've got some local Delaware families donating honey. We have Toscana that's going to use that honey to create some savories. And Frank's Wine, Frank Pagliaro and his wife Colleen are generously donating curated wines for all of those savories. And we're going to be touring the sculpture garden out back while raising awareness of MS.
And this is a lovely facility. Molly, do you want to give a little pitch here for the museum and the Copeland Garden?
Yes, absolutely. For your listeners who haven't had the pleasure of visiting, we're located in Wilmington off Kentmere Parkway. We have a gorgeous facility, an incredible art collection. But the crown jewel is really our outdoor sculpture garden, the Copeland Sculpture Garden. It's sort of a sprawling, grassy area where you can interact with the sculptures. There's a meditative labyrinth, which we've used for a lot of healing-related programs for groups such as cancer patients, MS patients. And it's just a beautiful place to come together around a mission like the MS Society.
And so this event is coming up on May 20th. It's an evening event, and I said May 20th. A dinner? It's going to be a dinner? Well, you have music.
There will be appetizers at all of the different sculptures. There will be kind of the appetizer bites, but we'll also have a full buffet dinner as well. So 5:30 to 7:30, tickets are available right now at SSS, that stands for Sip Savories and Sculptures, sss4ms.givesmart.com. And we'll be selling tickets right up until the event.
Okay, so that is coming right up.
That's correct.
And I do know that you've got music as well.
We do. We're really grateful to Bleach. It's a live band from Maryland that is donating their time and talent to come and provide live music for us. So we hope that everyone in Delaware will join us. Hopefully it's a beautiful day to enjoy that sculpture garden and learn a little bit more about the disease, learn a little bit about beekeeping. We're going to be talking a little bit about the healing powers of bees as well. And we're also going to be teasing our next year's event, which is going to be taking place on Saturday, February 3rd of 2024 at the Queen. So another fabulous venue in Delaware. That's the MS Parade, and that is a Mardi Gras inspired event. To Molly's point earlier about MS being an invisible disease, the masquerade kind of does a play on that, and everyone's got their Mardi Gras style masks, a black tie optional event. So more information will be coming out on that, but certainly at our May 20th event, we're going to actually start selling tickets for the masquerade event too.
And this is an annual event that you do.
Every year we host an event. The idea is to rotate different kinds of themes to keep it fresh, keep people interested, and again, ensure that we've got people from all over the state joining us to raise the funds. And like Molly said, you know, I've been involved since I was 6 years old and initially did not have a personal connection to MS. But since it is such a prevalent disease and people are starting to be a little more comfortable talking about it, I feel that that circle has, you know, really closed. And I know a lot of close friends now that have it. And so getting together and being able to support all of those friends and family living with this disease is really important to me. So I appreciate you all supporting us and giving us this opportunity to talk about it.
And you started as a little school kid, as a class project. And over the years, you've stuck by this organization. And it's a wonderful thing to see someone who can grow with an organization. Now you're on the board and organizing these amazing events. And now, so the Masquerade, the MSquerade, is an annual signature event, but you also do walks and other fundraising throughout the year. And if someone hears this and they go, gosh, darn it, I'd like to do something. Maybe I have a relative or I know someone who has MS and I would like to do something in their honor or to support them. How do we get involved with you over the course of the year?
I'll toss it to Kevin to talk about the dates, but I will just say that this is something that I think the MS Society does so well, because to your point, I started with the MS Readathon when I was 6 and kind of graduated to the MS Walk when I was in 7th grade, and then got pulled into, you know, the Bike to the Bay event, and then obviously the board. And I think that it's really important that societies like this have organizational events that can be done for individuals, but also families with children. So Kevin, you want to talk about some of the upcoming dates in our market?
Right. So we just actually just had our Walk MS event in Newark, which was very successful. Coming up, we have, you know, if you like to bike, we have Bike MS, Bike to the Bay, which is the second weekend in October. And then in Wilmington, we have the Thanksgiving Day Run for MS, which is on, as the name would suggest, on Thanksgiving Day.
And of course, if we go to your website, we can find out more about all of these events, because your footprint, you cover a large geographic territory with this chapter. Where do you cover?
We cover Greater Philadelphia, Lehigh Valley, South Jersey, and the great state of Delaware. So basically, it's Philadelphia Eagles territory, except for Lower Delaware. I get that, but you know.
Well, we'll forgive. No, we won't. So there is an event in your area, and wherever you're hearing this, if you're in Iowa and you're listening to this, go to nationalmssociety.org and you will be able to find the chapter that is closest to you and find events that are scheduled near where you live. But getting back here to us in this area, you are looking for volunteers, I'm going to guess, to participate in planning and organizing and manning these events. Do you look for volunteers throughout the year?
We do. And for things like the Thanksgiving Day Run and the Walk and Bike to the Bay, we need volunteers to man those rest stops, help us with the organization. Like, we, you know, we could not do everything we do without volunteers. Volunteers like Bianca and Molly, but also volunteers who just show up once a year to work a rest stop. So you can find out more information on our website at nationalmssociety.org.
Folks, I hate to say it, we are at the 2-minute warning place. Kevin, do you want to kick it off? What's the takeaway today?
Well, one of the takeaways is I just have to thank Molly for having the courage to do what she does, because a lot of people do not want to talk about their life with MS. And like she said, it has allowed her to connect with a lot of people and help a lot of people. So that's the first thing. But also just to say thank you to Bianca for organizing this great event, and also for everything you've done over the years to help people living with MS. We would not be where we are without volunteers like you.
Molly?
I'm just so grateful to be included and to get a platform to talk about my experience. I've included my mother. She's spoken at some of the events. It's been very meaningful to her. She is coming to the fundraiser on May 20th and is just so excited. So I'm just so grateful for everybody, what they do to support people like me. And thank you to Bianca for organizing this.
And now, Bianca, remind us what we need to do now.
Visit sss4ms.givesmart.com to purchase tickets to join Kevin, Molly, and I at the Sip Savories and Sculptures MS Saturday, May 20th from 5:30 to 7:30, and help us to raise enough funds that we continue to fund the hope that we need for a cure within our lifetime. And thank you again for your support to WJBR.
And so that is coming up. Sips, Savories, and Sculptures on Saturday, May 20th, 5:30 to 7:30 at the Delaware Art Museum in the fabulous Copeland Sculpture Garden. And as she said, you can find your tickets up until basically the event at ssforms.givesmart.com. And if you can't remember that, just remember you can go to the MS Society itself and just click on the events, find your chapter, you're going to find this, or just Google Sips, Savories, and Sculptures, and you're going to find it. But nationalmssociety.org. You can also call them at 1-800-FIGHT-MS. Here's where I say thank you all. Kevin Moffitt, president of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society Greater Delaware Valley Chapter. Bianca Fraser-Johnson, she is a board member for our local chapter, and she is also the chair of the Delaware WAM Committee. And Molly Giordano, the executive director of the Delaware Art Museum, and someone living with MS as well. Again, go to nationalmssociety.org, find out more information about absolutely everything we talked about today. Thank you all for being on.
Thank you so much
for
having
me.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.